are essentially the three themes. And again, it comes down to how the person is feeling on the other end. When you're trying to reach a mass audience, when you're trying to get a hit song out of it, you've got to get in hitting the universal themes and the themes that they're coming to music for. Is there a subset of people who come to music because they want a political message? Of course. Is there a subset of people that want to hear music because they want something very esoteric and artistic? Absolutely. But when it comes down to what most people want about music, they want to be entertained. And if your goal is to have a hit song, you have to entertain them, and those are the three universal themes that bring them that entertainment.
Right. And the other part two of that equation is humor, irony, and detail. Why detail? Because you're always singing to women. Women physically buy 50% of all records made and make men buy the other 50%. One of the big problems I've got with young rock bands, when they actually start cranking out, most people, the males 11 to 23, want a larger format. They don't want a single. They want 4, 6, 8 pieces. And they are prepared to steal it. So what you have to do is a whole different marketing thing. You have to give them a t-shirt and sell them the t-shirt and give them the music. It's just a whole different marketing campaign.
Yeah, and one of the other things is that, you know, what Ralph said is true, is that, you know, females were primarily record buyers, but as we've now moved to so much more coming from experiential listening on YouTube, experiential listening on Spotify, I think you all are probably familiar with the fact that this is now the coming storm. This is going to become more and more a large portion of your revenue and a large portion of what's going to be identifying whether you're a hit or not. Well, the truth is that what ends up happening on that front is the only way that you're going to make money is if the song is listened to by that person over and over and over again. You cannot have a song now where you go and convince somebody that you kind of like it, they go and they spend $1 for it on iTunes, and then they kind of throw it away. To make the money, to be able to make it a hit song, you have to have something that somebody wants to hear over and over and over again. And to do that, a catchy melody is not enough. Having a good chorus is not enough. What you need is you need to have all the things that Ralph was talking about here. You need to have the humorous element so that people feel like they want to come back to it. You need to have the universal theme, and you need to have the signifier. One of the things that I think is really interesting is that as much as possible, try to have one lyric in your song that basically causes somebody to scratch their head. Because if they scratch their head, they have to hear the song again. And if they have to hear the song again, then you're making more money if it's on YouTube or it's on Spotify, and you're more likely to be able to then cement that song in their mind. One of the examples recently was Justin Bieber's Beauty and the Beat song last year, where there's one line in the song where he sings, we're going to party like it's 30-12 tonight. Like, it's 30-12 tonight? Why 1,000 years into the future? Why only, why not 10 years? You know, it just sounds very odd, but more importantly is it sounds distinct. And distinct is the important part because that's what's going to grab somebody, and that becomes the memorable line, and it's not even part of the hook of the song.
Right, and that will attract women. For instance, if you take Taylor Swift's "We Are Never Ever 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 Getting Back Together Again,"
you forgot never.
Never ever ever never never ever whatever. But if you look, she is talking distinctly and precisely to women, and women actually half of her sales are physical sales. And then the other half are digital downloads. Well, the physical sales are the moms and grandmoms who go buy that. If you look at We're Never Getting Back Together, the first line says, because remember, to a woman, when a relationship is over, is 100% of the time the man's fault. So if you say in your opening line, since you left me, every woman goes, asshole. Okay? So the first line is, the first time we broke up. Now, that means every woman, he's a serial offender. He's really an asshole. Then you go along, and then you said you needed space? When a man says to a woman, look, we just need a little time apart to think of our options, she hears, you're screwing somebody. Okay? Next one, it goes down to at the very end. So you say, you want to get back together again, you love me, trust me. When a man says to a woman, trust me, don't trust them. Okay? So within that, within about 35 seconds, every woman's going, good girl, you're smart. I'm gonna buy that and give that to my daughter. I can take care of all her problems with this woman right here. Invites women in. It's really the key. Also, you're never a loser and you're never over 30. You're always a winner in your song. If there's a loser in your song, change pronouns. He did that, she did that. You're always a winner. Matter of fact, there were two in country, there were two huge songs, number one songs last year, where the males looked like winners. First of all, why would I, as a record company or someone else, spend $1,100,000 to make my singer look like a loser? When you see a song on the charts where the character is a loser, know that the artist wrote it themselves, and A&R was too cowardly to say, whoa! You just don't, why would you do that? There were 10, there were, on the country charts, it was Brenda Gilbert and David Nail, Let It Rain. David Nail, they spent probably $2 million on that. Radio didn't like it. It took 49 weeks to get to number one, but they were unrelenting. I don't think he, women hearing that, you pissed her off, you dumped all over her. What a jerk. Why would you do that? And yet, see, the reason we write is catharsis, getting shit out of our system. You know, I'm not worthy, I'm such an asshole, I'm so low. Why would you spend $1,100,000 on making that singer look like a loser? I heard a song last night, and the girls were great, singing their ass off, good looking, blah, 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 and they were losers, first pee out of the dish. They were like, hey, you know, you dumped me, and blah, blah, blah. I'm going, oh, no, change it to she dumped him, and then draw a conclusion from it that makes them look good. Never, ever let the truth get in the way of a good story, ever.
Absolutely true. By the way, one of the other things that's important, I want to touch on this, social networking. This isn't specifically about the art of the song, but if you don't have social networking right, you're not going to have a hit song, period. I think you all probably are aware of that. There's been study after study that cuts across every type of business, every type of genre that there is out there. And there's one thing that is unequivocal across the board. People only respond to positive messages. People don't want to hear your bullshit on social media at all. If you want to go and you want your songs to be out there and you want them to expand and you want them to get to the biggest audience possible, you have to be positive. You have a moment out there where you're going to be negative, where you're just like, oh, I just had a really bad day, oh, nobody showed up for my show, blah, blah, blah. You just shut your mouth, don't post it on any social network. Better to have nothing than to have that up there. And it's for all the reasons that Ralph talks about in the song. Your fans want you to be the most successful, happiest, gosh, I'm the most blessed person alive. It doesn't matter whether you have 5 fans or 5 million fans. That's what people want from you. And you have to give it to them in every aspect of what you do. You have to give it to them in your songs. You have to give it to them in your social media. And it's important to do that even when you're not talking about your songs, because when you talk about what you're feeling today at this conference, and Monday morning when you go on Facebook or Twitter and you go to promote your song, if you go and say, I've had a bad day at Canadian Music Week, you're going to have a bunch of people who are going to unlike your page, are going to unfollow you on Twitter. Not only that, you're not going to have people liking and sharing your stuff, which means that your post about your music, that is what it's all about, is not going to be seen, because you're not going to look like a hero. Trust me, if you can do one thing, is to just be unrelentingly positive about everything else you do, and when you have a bad day, shut everything down and don't let anybody know about it.
Your biggest problem is actually you, because you're all monumentally dysfunctional. The basic profile, as I came to the conclusion many, many years ago, some of my dear friends are Oscar winners and Grammy winners and whatever. The basic profile for a great writer seems to be physically, sexually, emotionally abused from a broken home with an inability to communicate, a desperate, desperate, desperate desire to be loved. Also, marginally dyslexic and slightly ADD. One or all, that's you. Isn't that great? Well, we're all the same, so get over it. The biggest problem you're ever gonna have as creators of works is are yourselves. You're gonna wanna tell the world how miserable or how whatever you are and how dumped on you were. And I mean, get over it. Be a hero, you want heroes.
And also, the other thing that's important is that what we find is when you are like that, you also have a tendency to not be succinct. And this is a world right now where you have to be succinct. The most sobering statistic I think I can give you, it is physically possible for anybody to only listen to 5% of recorded music that's released in any given week. Physically possible to only hear 5%. So if your music is going to be heard, it's going to have to hit somebody, and it's going to have to hit somebody fast. And it's one of the reasons why the length of intros are averaging 7 to 8 seconds in the last 4 years. It's one of the reasons why last year 25% of the top 100 selling songs had no intro whatsoever. People, you need to get to the point. YouTube has shown the same statistic. Most people, if they decide to leave a song, whether by a video or whether by listening to it online, they will decide that in the first 10 seconds. Think of your own experience when you go and watch a video and you decide, nah, I don't want to watch it. How much of that time are you doing that in the first 10 seconds? Probably 3/4 of the time, if not more. That's how people have a chance to look at yours. So when you go and you say, well, we got to go and have this nice intro to really set the mood and do all that stuff, it is a liability. You have to really nail it. It has to be the most amazing mood-setting instrumental solo at the beginning of a song in order to get somebody in. You have to be able to nail that element and get people in quickly and succinctly.
Right, and it is exactly 8 seconds. So the best bet for a pop song is 100 beats per minute or more, featuring the woman as an artist, have an 8-second intro, use the pronoun you within 20 seconds of the start of the song, get to the bridge or middle eight between 2 and 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It's called a 2-minute wall. If you don't give the person, that listener, something new information in that little niche, then they're gone. They're gone forever.
I actually also call that the mixtape mentality. I mean, how many of you have actually, you know, spent a lot of time listening to mixtapes? How many times you go to a party and you're hearing a lot of mixtapes? The reality is that it's great because you go through a lot of songs, but pretty much universally, they're switching out of songs every 90 to 120 seconds. And part of the reason why is because at that point, you've got verse, chorus, and you're like, okay, I've gotten enough of the song, let's move to the next song. Well, the listener, when they're not listening to mixtape, that because they're so used to those quick cuts, at that particular moment in the song, as Ralph said, they're automatically saying, this is the point where things are going to get boring. So if you don't have a significant change-up as you move from the second chorus into your instrumental bridge or whatever you're going to do at about the 2-minute point in the song, you're likely going to lose somebody. Here's the other important part. This is all a psychological thing. Now that we don't have radio to define when you get music discovery, what also happens is online you have infinite control, and that changes the psychology of the person that listens. One of the things that happens is every single time you hear a song and you leave that song before it finishes, your brain registers a negative association with that song. That song could be a great song, but if you're here 2 minutes and you think it's a pretty good song, and you're like, oh, I got a million things to go on, I'm going to do something. A week later, you're at a party, friends like, hey, did you hear that Ralph Murphy song? You go, yeah, that song's okay. Because you've made a negative connotation in your mind, and that means it's going to be a lot to overcome that. If you want a positive connotation, you've got to get somebody to the end of the song, because if they've completed a song, they've now created a positive attribution. It's one of the reasons why when you look at the endings of the song, they're basically, the fade out of a song has almost gotten to extinction. And part of the reason for that is because you want to end the song before the listener ends it for you. And you don't have a radio DJ to help control that. It's infinite control of each individual listener. So that's one of the reasons why it's important to basically end a song really quickly. And I personally advocate having a false ending to the song, because if you have a false ending to a song, you end the song with an incomplete chord. If you end the song with an incomplete chord, the listener leaves the song trying to finish and resolve the chord in their head. That means that they actually remember that song a little bit more. And if they remember it a lot, you know, that itch that you can't scratch. I mean, how many of you, like, you're driving somewhere and you stop the car and then that song stays in your head all day, or at least for 2 hours, right? We've all had this. Part of the reason why we have this is because you didn't finish listening to the song. You got to your destination and you turned off your car before the song finished. And your brain is trying to finish that song for you. You have the power to potentially do that on your own with each individual song by actually creating that experience at the end of your song. And this is a technique that a lot of pop artists are using nowadays as well.
One of the things, if you want to get played, most of us look at radio as kind of a destination to really enhance sales and do whatever. Well, remember that most is drive time seems to be the most bums in car seats. Also, the time we can actually capture people when they're going about something else. Well, they are predisposed to hate you at 7 in the morning. You do not go looking for new music at 7 o'clock in the morning. Okay, what you're looking for at 7 in the morning is local news, local weather, local traffic, and a familiar song. You want pumped up kicks, you want whatever that song is something that resonates with you, that makes you feel good. Suddenly, there's this brand new song coming at you, and it's your song, and your song, and your song. Well, you as a listener are looking for every single reason to change stations to find local news, local weather, local traffic, and a familiar song. So you will listen. There's a whole bunch of little things. Actually, we have a book signing after this because Jay's got his wonderful new book out, Hack Your Hit, and I have a book out, Murphy's Office Songwriting, which goes into this in depth. But they are predisposed to hate you. And if you don't invite them in, that's why the pronoun you is a huge trigger word. If you don't invite the listener in and keep them and create an expectation and then lead them to the title line. And also, I think Jay will probably address this a bit more, but in the internet world, your title is king. Because?
Basically, it's because you've got to have people who've got to find it to search. You know, there's a million things going out there, and you have to, it's your job, not, you can't blame it on the internet, you can't blame it on fans, you can't blame it on anything. It's your job to make sure that your song is found as easily as possible. Because there's, again, so much music out there, so many other things, so many things that people are being attacked to get their attention, that if you get somebody's attention for a moment, I tell you about a song, and you have that attention, you have to find that song right now. Right here today. And we all can do it on our phones right from this room. Because I guarantee you, we're going to go from this, we're going to do Q&A in about 2 to 3 minutes, we're all going to talk, you're all going to come and buy our books at the book signing, thank you for the plug, Ralph. And then after that, you're going to go out, you're going to have a dinner, and you're going to go see some shows, and by the time you actually get back to your house or your hotel room at 1 in the morning, are you going to remember the band I talked about? No. If you can't find that easily right now, it's done. You've lost that opportunity, and that opportunity to have everything grow is gone. Similar to what Ralph is talking about, and then again, another common mistake is I have a lot of people who I go and see posting on Facebook at 9 in the morning. Hey everybody, our new single just came out. Great. Not exactly the time that people want that. In general, every artist has their own best times to release things, but I will tell you as a general common rule of thumb, if you want to release a song specifically on YouTube, probably the best possible time will be Thursdays between 3 and 6 p.m. Just because what will happen is that you're just getting people to the point where they're starting to get ready for the work week, or the weekend. Everybody's starting to check out of the work week, and they're kind of going, okay, I'm thinking about the weekend, so I'm going to slack off a little bit at school, I'm going to slack off a little bit at my job, and let me go check Facebook, and let me go check YouTube. Oh, look what just popped up, something new from my favorite band. Similarly, again, you go and you post that on Monday morning, they're jammed right into the work week. They're not going to want to expose something. Every artist is a little bit different in terms of the best times, but in general, as a overarching rule of thumb, Thursday afternoons are really good to release content. I don't know if you have one other thing, but I want to move to Q&A. Do you want to?
No, let's go to it. Just one thing, by the way. When I was doing a lot of rock bands, I would always fade the song out, because what that does, it weans the listener off that song and moves them to the next song. When they dead end, they get pissed off, they want to hear it again, okay? Looking at both country charts and pop charts, nearly all 100% of them dead ended. They just stopped dead. Some did indeed have a false ending, which they could clip off and do whatever. So, Q&A, questions? Yes, sir. Do I have a microphone?
Thanks. Would you mind repeating that list of attributes that you gave us a few minutes ago? It started with have a female vocalist, with the first 30 seconds, etc.
Sure. One second. So your best bet at pop, 100 BPMs or more, beats per minute or more, featuring the woman as the artist, have an 8-second intro, use the pronoun you within 20 seconds of the start of the lyric, get to the bridge middle 8 between 2 and 2 minutes and 2 minutes and 30 seconds, averages 7 repetitions of title and creates an expectation, then fulfills that in the title. There's also the 70% chance, Bach, that you will also be the artist. The creator of that work will also be the artist. Matter of fact, there were, like, say, if you look at repetitions, Diamonds, Rihanna, and We Are Young obeyed the 2-minute rule and got to the 2-minute section, but there were just a huge number of repetitions in Diamonds. Oh yeah, 38 repetitions in Diamonds. That just wore my ass out. It was number one in Europe when I was over at UK teaching, and it's like, geez, please.
You do have to be careful about the repetitions because, again, you have one shot, so it is important to have a significant amount of repetition because otherwise how are they going to remember it if they're leaving the song? On the other hand, in an on-demand environment, when you start to get to an excessive length, 30, 40, 50 repetitions, now you got somebody who's listening to your song that's going and saying, oh, all right, enough already. So generally, as a rule of thumb, probably somewhere between 7 and 20 repetitions of the song title. It may seem like a lot, but you do have to have enough of that, otherwise you're really going to have a tough time having the listener remember it.
Yes.
Go ahead.
You often hear from songwriters that one of the keys to writing a good song is connecting with yourself and being truthful in your songwriting, because if you connect with yourself, you'll most likely connect with your listeners. But on the flip side of that coin, we have all this information being thrown at us, like a good song takes this and this, this format. So when you're writing a song, like, where do you find the balance? Like, you know, you sit down with pen and paper and you've got all these things you're trying to follow. But the second part of this question is, does the 10,000 hour rule apply to songwriting? Do you need to put in 10,000 hours to be a good songwriter?
I think for the first end of it, the important part is recognizing that your creativity should come first, because you're absolutely right. If there's one thing that I've seen in terms of independent artists who are able to make it on their own digitally, the song has to have some level of emotional pull. If it doesn't have some emotional response, whether it's a smile or a cry or whether it's a tug at your heart, whatever it is, if the person on the other end doesn't feel emotionally connected, it's going to be tough. So you do have to have that personal emotional response, and people can smell if it's fake. That being said, when we've talked to most artists, typically what we find is the artist and the songwriter will write the song as they would normally without any filters whatsoever and put it all down on paper. Then, after that happens, then they look at it and say, now how can I edit this? How can I take this to say everything that Ralph and Jay talked about to be able to fit this and make it more commercially viable? It's no different than somebody who's going to be editing a book, a magazine article. It's all about tightening everything up so that you can make sure your message gets across, and so it's not just a meandering poem or
right. It is not the writing of the song. It's the rewriting that makes the hits. That's the deal. You just blurt it all out, and then you say, okay. Because remember, every song when you were growing up, it was all about you. The writer gave you you as they saw you. They didn't give them you them. They gave you you. So they invited you in on a very primary level. Well, your job, when you choose the job of creator, your job is to give the listener them as you see them. It is not to give you you. They don't care about you. They don't even know. Most of the songs that you fell in love with early on, you never really even knew who wrote them. You didn't give a shit. They just talked to you about you or a situation you heavily identified with. So that's really the deal.
And the answer, just quickly, to the 10,000 hours is the average age of the top selling, the singer of the top selling songs is 28 years old. The reality is that most people actually basically work their tail off for a good 10 years in relative obscurity before they finally actually break through. I mean, we pay attention to the Justin Biebers of the world that kind of get, you know, thrown through in a couple of years' time, but truth be told, most people basically take 7 to 10 years in relative obscurity to only become an overnight success.
Right. I started when I was 11 years of age. I had my first number one when I was 22. And I went to L.A. and played. I went to New York and hung out and played. I had to join the union when I was 16 because I was playing so many gigs. I heard the Beatles in 63. I got a one-way ticket to Liverpool. I ended up just hanging with writers and getting, first of all, most of the information offended me. I thought, well, these old bastards, they must be like, you know, 30. Look at them, man. I'm the voice of tomorrow. Why don't they hear the voice of youth? And then they'd say, well, it doesn't work because. And I try it. And then suddenly I play the club and people go, oh, man, that song's really good. What did you do to that? I said, oh, just something I thought of, you know. I go back to the old bastards and say, now, when I do that and that, they go, oh, well, when you do that and that and that, this happens. You go, oh, yeah, right, sure. Did you try it? It works. Who knew? It was quite incredible. Yeah.
Hi, I'm
going
to try to figure out how to answer this question, because I just want to know what you guys can think of it, the idea. We have this short attention span nowadays, and everything. The short attention span. We have such a short attention span. So we have a short attention span. But pretend that this works.
Yes.
But I'm wondering. perhaps we like to share things, but we like to get out of it after 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So what about the old, going back to the old super short hit songs that are on the radio? Bam, they're there. You catch them. If you were going to use only 2 minutes and 30 seconds, would you change the formula of the speed of the song, or when you're done your verse, your chorus, would you put a bridge in it still?
No, most of them are about 2:30 to almost 3, 2:45, somewhere in there. And they incorporate all the structures were the same. Basically, the reason we made records short, and I'll tell you why, being a really old bastard, right? I did my first session in 1959. In Windsor, okay, in the studio with direct to disc. Well, what we used to do when we were cutting, like the April Wine records, you could have been late. That was a real short record, and it's called Depth of Cut. The groove was really deep, so the record was louder than the other records. Motown was notorious for it. They would set it up, and they would get to the thing. They had World War II trenches in the grooves. I mean, when you dropped a needle on a Motown record, it was like, whoa, it just blew at you. Well, that's why you economy of songs, shorter songs, you deeper cut. So it was a practical reason. It was made for marketing. It was a marketing tool.
Yeah, and actually what's been happening is, you know, the length of the top songs has actually stayed relatively consistent in the 340 to 350 range on average. And again, one of the reasons why is because when people bail on a song, they bail out in the beginning. I mean, there's a potential to bail out in the middle, but that's usually because it's just not a hit in the first place. Like, the songs that do well actually have that change up at the 2-2.5 minute mark. But what we're finding, what I found, I should actually say, is that there's actually a large potential where songs are going to creep up and start getting longer. One of the reasons, if you look, and you've been hearing, at least in the States, the big radio service Pandora has been fighting and trying to reduce your royalties for everything that you're going to get. And they're going to try to find everything in their arsenal to basically make sure that they pay less money to artists. But one of the things that they're also finding at that same token is that they pay per song. So it behooves them to play a 5-minute song that people like over a 4-minute song because it costs them the same, and it enables them to play less songs per hour for what they can do better for advertisers. This is going to be something that happens across the board because it's the same way that YouTube pays, it's the same way that Spotify pays. Doesn't matter how long the song is, what matters is how many songs you listen to. That's what they pay on. So more and more, these services, to keep their costs down, are actually going to be making sure that they favor well-liked songs that are longer. And so we're going to start to see more and more that actually there's going to be a significant number of songs that we're starting to see a little bit that are actually closer to 4.5 minutes in length, simply because these services will favor these songs because that they're favoring that financially. There's a question over here.
Yes.
So we talked in the producers panel. In the producers panel that you hosted, we talked about authenticity and how the listener can detect authenticity and honesty. But when we talked here, we talked about you know, staying positive and stuff like that in your writing too. But if we understand the songwriter as a dysfunctional person, fundamentally, then like where do we draw the line between like the admission that the songwriter has baggage and that the average person probably does too, and maintaining
not at 7 in the morning.
So where, like, just where do we draw the line between authenticity and what we need to omit for?
One of the things you're going to find, you have to write. It's cathartic. Get shit out of your system, okay? Like I said, well, I would finish 100 songs a year. I would demo about 40 of them. 40 would be appropriate vehicles for other people's dreams. There was something you could spend $1,100,000 on and have a reasonable chance of engaging that person with that listener, okay? The other 60 songs, there was nothing wrong with them. Just maybe I whined a bit too much. Maybe there weren't messages that anyone wanted to hear. Again, I would average 6 or 7 records a year, and I do, and then get a hit every third year. I'm working on a 1 in 300 margin. So the attrition rate is huge. You write, and you write, and you write. And when you find that magic little circle where you're actually speaking to that listener, remember, every song you fall in love with is all about you. So I've got to think like the fish. I've got to give you you. When that fish bites on a hook, on that piece of bait, it doesn't, wow, go, nice piece of stainless steel, I want to put that in my mouth. It goes, lunch. If it doesn't behave like lunch, it's not going to eat it. Well, the same way, if I'm not talking to you about you or a situation you heavily identify with, I won't identify with you. Okay? Now, you can have different reasons. Like, say you're going dancing. You want, you know, 120, you want 110 to 135 beats per minute. That's a different animal. So what you do, you think like that fish. That fish is going dancing. So therefore, you give a dancing fish. That's a concept. So you give them what they want. Give the listener what they want. Otherwise, they won't buy it. It is that simple.
Okay, we have time for one more question. We haven't got anybody from this side of the room. Let's actually just do these, you and her, just do these two questions.
So I know we're focused primarily on pop right now, which is cool. I wanted to know if you guys have any sort of recommendations around things outside of that. I work on more hard rock music, so when I think about people like a Trent Reznor and songs like Closer and Hurt, I'm assuming you guys probably know those. Maybe you can give feedback to songs that are a bit more outside the box and what suggestions you have versus just, you know.
What's funny is those songs, to be honest, structurally are outside the box. What
they are actually. Like, Hurt is a two-chorus song with a really fucked up outro. But sorry, go. Say what you're going to say, then I'll say what I'm going to say.
Okay. No, if you're looking at number one, see, I only ever study number one song, okay?
Okay.
That's because I'm a standalone outside writer. They only, I'm a hip whore, I'm a song slut, okay? when they need a hit to make their artist shine, they come and find me. I look at the character, I look at the vocabulary, I look at who their audience, what they're doing. I've had like a couple of things with Annihilator years ago, thrash metal band. I went on the road with them, looked at their audience, spoke to them, found their vocabulary, and worked within that framework. So
yeah, I think the answer is that right now in the digital economy, with the way people are responding to songs, the basic elements that we're talking about hold true no matter what the genre. It could be hard rock, it could be rap, it could be jazz. It doesn't really matter if you're looking to get that big mass response. Now, at this point, rock has actually shrunk so that it is just a little bit above niche genre level in terms of where its audiences are. And when you start to say, I just want to go after my niche and just be able to make a successful run of my niche, then you really need to stick to your artistic beliefs and tenets. And to a large degree, ignore what we're talking about and follow your instinct, because it's really going to be about the art at that point, less than about the commerciality. If, on the other hand, you really want to go commercial, it doesn't matter if it's going to be processed beats or it's going to be a live drummer with 8 toms and 20 cymbals. It doesn't matter. What matters is that it's the same techniques. You've got to impress people fast. You've got to thematically hit them with the same kind of songs. You've got to have the change up to 2 minutes, and you've got to address them. So it doesn't really matter about the genre.
I'll give you a quick example. A friend of mine, Mary Gaucher, who's just a wonderful singer-songwriter. She eats at my house, I eat at her house. She's been on the road forever, and she's touring and working in sweet Motel 6s and playing the 500 soft-seaters and whatever. Well, a while back, she came to me and said, Ralph, said, I've got to have a hit. I've got to grow. I've got to grow my market, because as it is, I keep the same fan base. I can sell this, and I'll spend the rest of my life on the road. And she said, I would love to. Let's sit down and write a hit. I said, okay, come on. We spent 2 days. At the end of 2 days, she said, I can't do this. It's just so alien to me. I cannot actually think about the listener. I've got to tell, because she's a recovering alcoholic. She's has a tremendous amount of personal, and she wouldn't mind me saying, one of her big anthems is, I drink. And she's just brilliant. But a lot of people cannot do that. As I say, I'm a song slut. I'm a hit whore.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
All right, we're gonna wrap up some really quickly. So one last question right down there.
Just a little off topic, I guess, but you had mentioned at 7 p.m. and not be
7 a.m.
That's right, and not be a good time. Then, so if I have an artist and I'm gonna be doing, I'm releasing her album and we're promoting a song. Are you then suggesting that early morning shows are not a good idea to have you?
Well, the early morning shows are likely not gonna have you. I mean, one of the things that's right now, and you have to realize that. You've got to produce songs, you've got to talk to fans through social networks, you've got to make videos, you've got to tour, you've got to do all these things. Everything says you've got to be extraordinarily judicious with your time. And one of the keys to success that I found being a record label owner is I've got to know when not to do the things that are not going to, highly likely not going to make sense. I don't go after radio until I have an immense amount of online data that I can show radio programmers because it doesn't make sense. I know the way that they think. Similarly to that point, it's just unless you have a star artist where you know you can get them onto morning programs, don't waste your energy there simply because your energy is going to be much more productive finding more fans online. Your energy is going to be more productive calling up, you know, smaller blogs or emailing blogs and getting them to try to write about you. You have to focus your energy where the energy is going to make the most sense, and that's probably the best.
And Jay's book, Hack Your Head, is one of the roadmaps to the whole internet.
Which brings the...
And Ralph, can I please, after we're done, would you just listen to my song on my phone, please?
Well, right after
we're going to be doing
the book signing.
Now.
Ralph's book, Murphy's Love Songwriting, is fantastic. If you guys don't have it, it's absolutely wonderful. I've got two books, Future Hit DNA, which is a lot about hit song structure, and a book called Hack Your Hit, which is about marketing tips. And we will be outside in about 2 minutes to sign books. And with that, on behalf of Ralph, thank you all so much.
Thank you.